Hi, you're on the Vegas Poker Radio 22Q Charity Podcast. Who's calling, please?
Hey, this is Jamie Gold.
Jamie Gold, 2006 World Series of Poker Main Event Champion. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. You got to bear with me a little bit. I just got off a plane. I'm in New York City, and my phone is... it's probably got... I don't know, one bar, whatever that means.
So hey, if
you get cut off,
if we only get one bar out of you, that's more than enough. We really appreciate it.
No, but I'm saying if it's okay, I'll talk to you as long as I can, and then if you want more, I'm going to arrive at my destination in, I don't know, 15 minutes, and I can call you from there.
That works for me, Jamie.
Okay, but we can start now.
Yeah, absolutely.
And by the way, Montel Williams said he'd be happy to call in.
Oh, okay. I would love to talk to Montel. Are you kidding me? I'd love to talk to Montel Williams.
I'm supposed to see him, but he has to get on a flight to... He just did Good Morning America today. He's doing a whole publicity tour for the troops. So he's got to go meet in D.C. tomorrow. So I don't know if I'm even going to see him for dinner, but he said he'd be happy to call in for you.
Well, you can absolutely pass the information along to him. Just so you're aware, Jamie... I just hit the 45th hour of a 50-hour-long podcast.
Oh, we're at the end. Wow, congratulations.
We still got 5 hours to go.
But I have a feeling you'll make it.
I think I'm going to make it. I've had one co-host on who dropped out 2 hours ago. He just tapped out. He said he couldn't go anymore. But we're going to muscle through it. I just had Christina Lindley on. She told me to tell you hello.
Sure.
Yeah, she told me to tell you hello. She said you guys were friends.
Yeah, she's great.
Yeah, she's awesome. So, Jamie, I've been wanting to talk to you for a long time. I'm a big fan of your main event win back in 06, and a couple questions that I have, and if you just want to jump, I'm going to try and hurry them along because I know that you got the one bar. Are you still representing...
But it's okay. I can also call you when I get to my destination. I'll only be off maybe 5 minutes. So
okay. Okay, no problem. So then we'll just go for it. It's been, what do you figure, it's been 6 years now since winning the main event. Are you still... Are you still making your primary living playing poker, or have you kind of just walked away from poker and are focusing on other things? I know you had the Tropicana thing going on. I'm not sure if that's still in place or not. I wanted to ask you about that as well.
Yeah, it's not. It was a great learning experience. But I realized very quickly after I got in there and the executives that brought me in were no longer there, that if you don't have support from, the top level of whatever group you're working with, which, the actual owner of the Tropicana is not a fan of poker, and so he really didn't want to have a poker room in there. He was just doing it as a favor for the guests. And so my biggest supporter left, and we just did not have... you really need serious advertising and promotion, and we did our best under, in a tough situation, but they have great people working there, and I really hope that people will support their room. I've heard it's dark most of the time now, and so I feel bad for the whole situation, but I learned a lot, and so I realized the next time I go in and, do any kind of business with any poker room, I really understand what they go through, which I did not know anything about before I actually started working on the inside of it. So, it's not as easy as people think to run a poker room.
So does that mean that you're open to having another casino be branded the Jamie Gold Poker Room since the Tropicana deal?
It's more... I realize that the name is more of an ego thing. I don't need my name on a room. I do believe that I have the ability to fill a room, especially, in any major Atlantic City, Las Vegas, Florida... and so I'm actually talking to a few places. I know that I still have the ability, maybe not at the highest level, but for people, for tourists that want to play for, a few hundred dollars, I still see that there's a thrill for them to play with someone who won the main event. It's obviously not just me. Anybody in my position, there are several people like myself who are willing to play at that level. There are players who you see on television who... you know, if you want to play with them, you got to put up $100,000 or more. I actually love the game at all levels. I have more fun playing for $100 than I do for $1 million because, you know, you don't have to focus, and I don't really care about that level of, you know, losing, and it's much more about the social aspect of the game, which I always loved. So I'll play for $1, or sometimes I do, you know, still play at a much higher level than I should probably be playing, because it's, you know, sometimes we play at levels where it actually hurts when you lose.
Yeah, and speaking of that, after your, I mean, you kind of had a whirlwind career after the main event win in 06, you then kind of took over the high-stakes poker television community and were playing, and I mean, I don't know. I don't know your.
I wouldn't say that. I was definitely invited, and you know, I felt honored to be on those shows. But I definitely can't. I wouldn't say that I took it over.
Well, I mean, you were definitely a central focus of it. Now, my question is, I mean, not. I don't really want to get into your financials, but it's well publicized that you had cashed for $12 million in the main event, but you roughly got about half of yourself. But some of those games you were playing, like, wasn't really the best bankroll management to be playing them, or is that just all for television and ratings?
I understand that. Yeah, I mean, it's funny. There's several things. One, let's do it after maybe when I call back in. But I would actually love to get the facts straight, which are all documented online. These are not my opinions, but people still don't know what really happened when I won. That I was not backed by somebody. I absolutely told somebody that I would split with them, but I'd love to actually tell you the story. People are amazed when they hear what actually happened and why I got sued. It wasn't because I was backed by somebody. I was never backed. I was actually bought in by Bodog because I was playing on their celebrity team. But we'll get into all of that because it's a really interesting story that people don't seem to still know the truth. People think that I was backed and that I tried to not pay a backer, which is absolutely untrue. People just, you know, heard the rumors, and then I wouldn't expect anybody to actually do research online unless you're an actual journalist. But people still get that wrong. People think that I tried to not pay a backer, which is absolutely untrue.
Absolutely. We would love to.
I'm happy. It's actually a very interesting story. People seem to, you know, enjoy when they find out what really happened. And again, not my opinion, but the documented facts, which I'm allowed to, you know, speak about. I just didn't talk about it after I won because my dad was dying. He had, you know, this horrible disease called ALS, and the last thing I felt like doing was arguing over, you know, the silliest thing where I gave somebody half the money and then they sued me anyway.
Sure, sure.
So, but we can get into that. But the second part of it that you were, you know, asking about the bankroll management and online and, you know, what I was playing on television, if you actually watch when I'm playing, let's say the first show, which had, you know, the highest level of volume was high stakes poker, right?
Yep.
If you actually do the math, I came out even on high stakes poker. Not to say that, you know, I'm not talking about what my
That's being a little bit results oriented though.
Show, people thought I lost millions of dollars on that show. If you do the math, I lost $60,000 on the first show to Doyle Brunson mainly. Where I just played bad. The second season, I actually won almost $400,000. And then that's why I decided. I knew that I was not skilled enough, and nor should I be playing at the level of the $500,000 buy-in. But I actually talked myself into it because I won $400,000 the day before. And I don't know if you know this, but a whole season is shot in a day or two.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why we're all wearing the same clothes every show.
Yeah. You would think they would have you change every hour.
So you reshoot a whole season in a day or two. So, you know, we'll shoot like 10 episodes in a day. Because if you shoot for 10 hours, they cut it into that many episodes. So I actually talked myself into playing the next day, which was I was not planning on playing the $500,000 buy-in with Guy La Liberté. And
oh, we lost Jamie.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess he's gonna charge up and call back. Oh damn! Now I just screwed that up too. Let me call Brandon. I know you guys are. I know you guys are hammering the chat with like Jamie Gold hate, and I get it. I do. Actually, this is him now. Hang on. Hi, Jamie.
Yes, it was not my phone dying. I went through a tunnel.
Oh, okay. I was just getting prepared to...
Are we still on the air?
Yeah, you're still on the air. Absolutely.
Okay. So what I was saying is that I actually won, I think, a 440 the day before the $500,000 buy-in. And, you know, if you watch the episodes, you could see that I was kind of in a rush. I wasn't really supposed to be there that day. I was booked to host a charity event at the Playboy Mansion. So I was constantly ready to leave, you know, saying, oh, one more hand, because I had to catch a flight. I wasn't supposed to play in that $500,000 buy-in, but it was a free roll for me. So I ended up losing.
Okay.
Are we still on?
Yeah, no, we're still on. I hear you.
I'm hearing feedback, sorry.
Oh, no, you're coming across clear to me. I'm not sure.
So I ended up losing... roughly in the range of about $400,000. If you could tell, you know, when I got in that hand with Sammy Farha, where I should have gone broke, you know, the aces versus kings, I actually only ended up losing, you know, for the day, about $400,000. So I would say a $20,000 loser overall, but, you know, you get paid, I don't know what it was, maybe $1,200, $1,300 an hour, and I've probably put in, you know, 30, 40 hours on the show, something like that. So it was a break-even experience for me. But can you imagine, you know, as a young, you know, beginning poker player for my, you know, whatever you want to call my professional career, you know, which I've never been a full-time professional poker player. I've always continued to do other things that I think I, you know, do really, really well. I think I'm great at, you know, poker and publicity for poker, you know what I mean? And
sure.
I create a lot of excitement around the, you know, poker, and I raise a lot of money for charities based on poker events and things like that, but I realize I'm not the best poker player in the world. I'm very conscious of how much I always have to learn. I feel like I get better every time I play, but I'm very aware of, you know, where I lack, you know, as a poker player. I think I'm a good, decent tournament player, and I'm a big fish in the poker, in the cash games, but I'm learning every day. And so if you figure, you know, the experience of being able to play with the best players in the world, all the guys that I watched on television as a fan, and I broke even, you know, it was so good for me. I didn't win much money on Poker After Dark, but I only did the $20,000 buy-ins. I never did the big cash games on there. So I think I chopped one with Mike Sexton, so that maybe broke me even, and I was probably down. So in all the shows put together, you know, I might have been down about $100,000, but considering the, you know, $6 million I won minus taxes, so, you know, my poker bankroll, if you want to just talk about TV shows, you know, I never get into personal.
No, I would never expect you to get into that. That's not appropriate at all.
You know, I would never ask anybody else, you know, what their personal is. And, you know, we all have our ups and downs and issues,
sure,
and what have you. But my poker bankroll, based on television, is pretty good.
And a kind of a related question, Jamie. What was the obsession with being the world's greatest bluffer, and how much do you think that cost you to try and get that crown?
You know, one, I don't believe that there is a crown. It was a bit of it was for TV. I mean, I came from the television and movie business, and so I was very conscious of the fact that most poker players are not the best television, you know, guests, let's say. Most poker players either don't speak at all or are just not, you know, particularly entertaining, and good for them. They're focused on the poker game, you know. I mean, look at guys like Donnie Chan, you know what I mean? He never says a word, you know, so eventually I believe in television as the future of poker, that I, you know, and it's not like I'm such a genius about it. It's obviously, if there was no Chris Moneymaker winning on television and all of that, the poker boom, you know, may or may not have happened that way. So poker on television, I think, is really important too. I'm very conscious and believe in the future of poker. So as opposed to some of the haters that believe that I wasn't so good for poker, I am very proud of all of the work that I've done on behalf of the poker community, the money that I've put into the poker community, the money I've raised for the poker community. And so you know, it's a real short argument when people tell me that I wasn't good for poker. I'm real proud about it, and part of what I had to do, I felt like, was make poker more exciting, because if you just have everybody playing poker, never saying a word on television, it's never going to last. Poker on television will die if all you do is watch Ace King versus Queens all day. It gets a little boring. So I believe that I had the opportunity to become a character, and so I absolutely overplay. You know, I don't like watching myself on television. I'm actually, you know, embarrassed by a lot of the things that I've done. You know, I don't think I ever, you know, hurt anybody, but I don't like what I've watched in the past, and I look forward to being a much better person on, you know, television playing poker. But I do believe that I created some excitement and some interest. And so, you know, the producers of those shows, you know, were, I think, you know, pretty happy with what I was doing. And so a lot of that being the biggest bluffer was for television. But I also, personally, that is me. You know, I was getting a little bit, I shouldn't say bored with the game, but I felt like I did everything. All I ever wanted to do was win the World Series of Poker. And, you know, it's kind of like careful what you wish for. Once you accomplish your, you know, your largest goal in something, there wasn't a lot more for me to do in terms of me just playing. There was a lot for me to do in terms of raising money and awareness for the causes that I believe in, and a lot to do for the, you know, for poker as a whole, to make sure that it gets legalized and all of that kind of thing. But for me, just playing poker, what more could I do other than win the largest main event, you know, prize? There wasn't a lot more for me to accomplish personally. You know, I'm not saying that there aren't other things to accomplish, but they weren't that important to me. So I felt like all I could do is just try to be the best bluffer that I could be, because I felt like it takes a lot more skill to bluff somebody, especially when everybody knows you're bluffing. Right? I mean, when everybody knows you, when if you're the tightest player in the world, you pull off a bluff, you know, you don't get that much satisfaction out of it.
Sure.
Because people give you a lot of credit. But when everybody knows I'm bluffing and I can still bluff you, I find a lot of satisfaction out of that, because I feel like that's a great talent and a great skill that I basically set my bar really high and cost myself a lot of money. It was a great last part of your question that you asked. Yes. It has cost me a ton of money, but I got a lot of satisfaction out of it, that at least I found that, you know, when I can bluff somebody, knowing when I'm coming and you still, you know, I still can get you to fold, you know, there's a certain satisfaction out of that. There wasn't a lot left for me after winning, except trying to be, you know, the best player that I could be. And I felt like that was, you know, one of those skills, that I wanted to develop. And so, you know, do I really ever think that I'm going to be the best bluffer in the world? No. You know, there is no best anyway. I could be the best at one moment on one night. But when people talk about the best in poker of anything, you know, what day, what time are we talking about, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Jamie, you had mentioned earlier about the 2006 main event. I just kind of wanted to go back there and touch on something you said earlier. You were talking about, you know, your table talk and all that. And I realized that it was really your first moment there, and you were also coming from a television background, so you wanted to be a compelling character. Do you feel like at any point in time you were out of line, specifically with the top comment, but throughout the entire final table?
Sure. Absolutely out of line. You know, here's the problem, and it's not an excuse, but just so you understand where I was coming from. I was playing, my home casinos were in LA, you know, the Hustler, the Bike, those kind of places, and believe it or not, and I was playing there every day and playing in tournaments, those things were allowed. Table talk was allowed. And so I never got a penalty for it. So I was used to, that was my first main event. That was my first big event that I ever played at the main event. So I don't want to make an excuse for it, because it's not right. But I actually did not know the rules. I actually thought it was okay to talk if you were playing heads up. I still think that you should be able to say anything you want heads up, as Danny Negreanu and a lot of people argue, that if you're heads up, you should be able to say, flip over cards, do whatever you want, as long as you're not colluding. Now, that top was collusion, and it was absolutely inappropriate. I'm embarrassed by it. I wish I didn't say it. You know, people make fun of me about it. I would make fun of it, too. I think it's silly. and it was my first time playing on a big stage, and I made a mistake.
Well, that's actually that takes a pretty big man to admit that, and thank you for sharing that with us.
No, I mean I wouldn't say that, but it's, you know, I think it takes an obvious self-aware person to admit that.
Well, I guess I would say the answer to that question would maybe determine, because I mean it's an obvious answer. It's just a matter of if you're going to give it or if you're going to try and spin it, and you gave it straight up, so I appreciate that.
Yeah, there's no spin for it. I mean I'm sure other people might try, but people think that I'm constantly trying to hide something. I'm not. There's nothing to hide. I have ups and downs. I have problems just like everybody else. You know, I probably have a problem of telling the truth too much. You know what I mean? I share too much of the truth, and that's why I always try to keep my personal life away from poker. Nothing, you know, that I'm embarrassed about. I just don't think it's appropriate. A lot of people just, you know, talk about their personal lives so much, you know, and I just don't find it appropriate. You know, maybe because I came from representing, you know, TV and movie stars, and I would always coach them to keep their personal life out of media. It's just not appropriate, whether it's good or bad. It's not. It's nothing to brag about, and nobody, deserves to know about what you're going through.
Yeah, good point, Jamie. Good point. We have an interactive chat that goes along with the show, and some of our users are asking some questions, so I just want to try and get some of those in while they're still here, because I don't know if they will be, if you should happen to call back.
Absolutely, and if it's okay, while I still have a little battery life, if you want to just finish up, you know, when I was talking about, you know, because this is the most common question that I get asked, is that what happened after I won? Was there a backer? Was there, and I'll just give you really quick, and then anybody could do any research they want, because it's all public domain. It's public information. So the really quick thing is somebody who I thought that I was friendly with, who was from the UK, did me a favor. He helped me get celebrities for the Bodog celebrity team. They were not the celebrities that he had promised. So they told him they'd give him a buy-in to the main event. They wouldn't give him a buy-in. I felt really bad for him. And so I told him, look, they're giving me a buy-in. You did me a favor. I'll split whatever I win with you. I ended up winning. I split the money with them. I left it at the cage for 2 weeks because I was trying to figure out how to deal with the taxes. Nobody ever leaves $5 in the cage for 5 minutes after they win. There's a reason why I didn't touch the money. I wasn't trying to take it all for myself, as a lot of people think. I was trying to figure out how to split it up properly because he was from the UK. He doesn't pay taxes on gambling earnings, but it turned out that he didn't earn it. I did. So I'm a U.S. citizen. I wasn't going to lie to the government and tell them that he backed me so that he could get his half without taxes taken out. We had to take taxes out on the whole thing. But he had lawyers and people talking in his ear and convinced him to sue me so that they could get, you know, a piece.
Jamie, is that... just let me ask you a question. Is that because he didn't back you? Because it's completely fine in a standard backing arrangement for...
I know, but I'm saying, but there was no backing arrangement. So that's what people are confused.
So that's where the conflict came.
I didn't need the money. I wasn't broke.
Yeah.
I had plenty of money. Bodog brought me in because I was somebody who they thought could actually win the World Series. Good thought, you know.
Yeah.
They picked the right guy who was actually in Hollywood, who had access to a lot of celebrities. You know, at the time I was representing James Gandolfini and Lucy Liu and Donnie Wahlberg and Kristen Davis and Felicity Huffman, and I had a really nice list of celebrities. Some played poker, some didn't, but I also had access to most of the celebrities that were playing poker. He was somebody who also had access to celebrities because he was coaching celebrities to play poker. He couldn't get them the ones they wanted. Nobody bought me in. I didn't need anybody to buy me in. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I think backing is brilliant. I hope I get backed for every tournament for the rest of my life. I'm totally into that whole system. I think it's really smart. It's good for the backers. It's good for the players. Look, Phil Hellmuth, who could be more successful than him, always tries to get backed in situations I see. So why not? You know what I mean? Most players are always looking for sponsorship deals. That's a backing deal in one way or another. You know what I mean? Whether you're just fronting for them because you're advertising for them or they're taking a piece of you, it's still a backing situation. Every professional poker player wants to be backed in some way or another. So I'm not against it, but I was never backed. So what happened was I won. I told him what we figured out, which he was going to get. I forgot what it was, $6 million minus taxes, $4.2 million, whatever it was. offered him the check, and he told me to go screw myself, and he sued me anyway. And now I'm dealing with my dad, who may have had one day left to live, but he ended up living another 6 months. But with ALS, he made it 6 years. You're only supposed to make it two, so he could have been on the last day of his life. The last thing I was going to do was go out in public and argue about somebody who was just being greedy and didn't want to pay taxes on his half of my money, which I had to pay taxes on all the money. When you don't have a backer, you can't split it up and let him deal with his own taxes. I had to take it all out and then give him half because it was a promise as a gift. It wasn't a backing deal. Is that clear?
It's completely clear, and I appreciate you clearing that up so everybody...
The only thing I'm not allowed to say is when we never went to court. We actually just had a very quick sit-down with the attorneys because it was so ridiculous. What could he go to court for? People thought we were in court and there was a big battle, nothing like that. First time we sat down together, it was about 6 months later. We sat down, we just said, this is ridiculous. What are we doing? We're splitting up the money. I'm not allowed to say it's a sealed court document of the exact dollar amount. But obviously people, might talk about their legal fees and, issues and all of that. So it wasn't exactly the dollar amount. I'm not allowed to say if it went up or down, but you could imagine which way it went.
Sure.
The right thing happened. How about that? And then we, ended it right there.
Do you feel like regardless of the outcome, it did irreparable damage to your reputation?
Well, you know what? The problem is it did damage to my reputation for a lot of people who've never met me. All my friends, it actually, enhanced the reputation. I'm just too generous and too kind and too, I just care more about other people than I do about myself sometimes. And I shouldn't have been so nice about it. And if I was cutthroat about it, none of this would have ever happened. But I could have been cutthroat about it. Once he sued me, I could have went right at him and not giving him anything.
I guess what I'm asking, Jamie, is do you feel like it had an impact on you not being a representative of a major poker company after the Bodog deal and so forth? Do you think that might have been one of the catalysts for them staying away?
Absolutely. There was a lot of misunderstanding. But what I'm finding now, it's funny, I have this amazing new agent. Well, I shouldn't say new. We've been together for a while now. But, Randy Casper at PPI, they represent 200 other poker players, and I'm so lucky to have these guys in my life. He says that, believe it or not, now, this wasn't the case 5 years ago, but now it actually is so much better that it happened because, unfortunately, in our society, when there's controversy and you're infamous for something, whether it's true or not, it's actually like I'm famous for something bad that actually never happened. But he said, in business now, we have so much more opportunity because I'm actually probably more famous now because of it. That if I was just a nice guy who won the World Series of Poker and then took 4 years off to go work for the UN and raise money for charity and all the things that I'm doing, where I basically left, I didn't work in the standard business of poker. I just worked for, raising money for causes that I believe in through poker. But most people probably would have forgotten, but people actually still talk about me on the table because half the people know, and it's amazing. Any of my friends that, every time they play poker, somehow my name comes up and they obviously defend me because they say, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't know the guy. You don't have to like his face, but you can't say that he's a cheater or that he screwed anybody or anything like that. It's completely untrue. So it actually has kept people talking about me. And so, as my team says, you're twice as famous because of the bullshit. And so, am I proud of it? No. I wish that it happened? No. But I guess now that I realize that, I do want to have a career in poker because I believe that, there's always a place for somebody who can draw, I have, let's say, 1 million people who are fans, and there's 1 million people who absolutely hate me. Well, both actually want to play poker with me. The people who hate me, right, are more interested in taking my money than the people who love me. So, in a weird way, it actually works for business. So when you talk about sponsorships and the future of poker, because I definitely want to be involved in that future of poker, I have a site called Free Gold Poker, and there's a reason why people are drawn to coming and playing with me. We give away prizes and cash up to $100,000 a month. It's all free. But, I'm doing a little plug for my site now. we also donate 10% of every dollar that we make from advertising to charity. So you're actually doing something good by coming and playing for free with me. If you go online right now, my friend Ray J, who I used to be his agent, you know, music and TV star, is actually on there playing right now. And so I believe, you know, that there is a future for me in online poker and sponsorships and all of that. I believe that I'll be a great positive force for any company that wants to get involved in poker. And because usually people figure out, wow, you know, all the things that you were, you know, talked badly about actually weren't true. But again, you don't have to like my face. You might not like my personality. That's fine. But you can't hate me because you think I screwed somebody, because it's just not true.
Absolutely, Jamie. I will say this. It's from the sounds of it, you've got the best cell phone battery in the business because you've been with us for over a half an hour now.
Yeah, and it's still going. I'm on one of those old Blackberries, and so I now have half a bar left, but it's not yellow yet. So I'm feeling pretty good.
Yeah, I got a couple questions from our...
Sometimes it dies quickly and sometimes it doesn't. I don't know.
I got a couple questions from our chat room. Hopefully we can wrap those up, and then I think that's about it. We got another guest at 9 o'clock. So if you can get through these couple questions, I would be so happy and thankful for you appearing on the show, Jamie.
Sure. Yeah, I'm just sitting outside the my destination. So I'm on with you as long as the phone lasts and. No problem.
So one of our users wanted to know about Malibu Home Games. Do you have a strong presence there, and what kind of stakes are they playing, and you know, any good details you can give us?
I actually have some current issues going on about these huge home games that we played. I will only talk about what's already been in the press. You know, I'll never speak privately, because there's a reason why we call them private home games. They're private, right?
Sure.
So I will never out anybody, talk about anybody's business, talk about the rates that we're playing. But it's obviously been heavily publicized that a few years ago, we were, myself and some very famous and very rich people, were playing in games where the buy-ins were anywhere from $100,000 to $1 million. We've had some very serious issues surrounding that. And so I'm actually currently involved in an issue with the government and taxes because of that. I never had a tax problem because of what I won. I have serious tax issues because this is something really good to talk about, actually, that I don't find this talking about my private life. I find this helping other poker players, and that this is a public poker issue. What I'm going through right now is that because there was somebody in our game, his name is Brad Ruderman, he's in jail right now. He was like a mini Madoff. He stole, I don't know, $100 million, something like that, from a hedge fund, and lost $25 million of it in our private game. Now, when he lost, he would pay us in checks or do wire transfers. So let's say, I'll just give an example, I'm not going to get into details, but the example is, he lost $1 million in the game, he wrote me a check for $1 million. Once he got caught for, you know, stealing that money, it's ill-gotten gains, so I actually won money that was ill-gotten gains. Totally understand that there's a claim to that because he actually stole this from other people. So we all had to settle, and very recently, Toby Maguire and Nick Cassavetes and a lot of other people settled, and so that whole case is done. If you look up online, TMZ, poker, movie star, whatever, that's what you'll see online. Now, the issue that got farther than, the government said, wait a second, you were winning $1 million in a cash game. How come you didn't give us our 40%? I said, yes, I did, but I had to offset my losses. They're now arguing that they're trying to change the law, that if you're a professional gambler, that you're not allowed to take your losses against your wins unless they were absolutely documented in the same way. So you can take, if you play in a tournament and you buy in for $10,000, you can take that as a loss, right, against whatever you win because it's documented. Now, when I play in a cash game, and I won $1 million, and I got that in a check, but then I lost $100,000 10 times, but I paid that in other ways, cash, whatever, if it wasn't in the same form, check, what have you, you're not allowed to take that as losses. So imagine every time as a poker player that you won, you had to pay 40% to the government. Every time you lost, you just lost. There's no poker player in the history of the world that can fade that kind of spread, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's insane.
So that's what I'm going through right now, that the government is actually trying to say, going back for the last 6 years, that everything that I won in a home game that I would have to pay taxes on, but everything I lost I can't claim unless I actually had that same checking account that I was depositing in, you know, going against it. So good luck, you know, if we don't fight and change this law. It's because it's very gray, that you can interpret it any way you want. Because you're allowed to take gambling losses, but they're interpreting that it has to be the equal and same value and same, yeah, not value, I'm not saying it properly, but of the same style.
Sure.
So if I end up losing this case that I'm involved in right now, it's gonna I don't know what it's gonna do to the poker community. The live poker playing, and even in casinos, it's gonna change everything. So, you know, I don't mind talking about the overall issue. I'm just obviously not going to talk about the exact numbers and what I'm involved in.
No, I completely understand. Another one of our users, he's actually a very talented writer, and he writes on our message boards. He writes in and he just says, I legitimately want to pitch you a screenplay, but I heard you quit. Are you still in the business, and if so, are you accepting new clients?
I am still in the business, but I'm not in that form of the business. I'm not interested in representing anyone anymore. But I am interested in if there's a great poker script, because there are so few great poker scripts. I am still on the side of production, you know, putting together television shows, and I'm actually working on a great movie right now with a very famous director and some movie stars and what have you. And I love the business. I'm just not 100%, you know, I do several things. I work in several different businesses that are all connected in some way to either, you know, poker, celebrities, Hollywood, online, you know, marketing, promotion, what have you. They're all connected in one way or another. Because, you know, my same poker community, my million, you know, people that will follow what I'm doing online playing poker are the same people that might actually go see a movie that we put together with the celebrities that I can have play on my online site. You understand? So I work in several different businesses, but I'm not scattered, as believe it or not.
Awesome. Jamie, I only got two more questions coming in from our live chat, and then I'm going to let you go, and I appreciate the time that you took out of your day to come on this charity podcast. It's for a great cause for kids who are afflicted by 22q deletion syndrome. It affects 1 in 2,000 children, and we're just here trying to raise some awareness, and we appreciate you coming on to help the cause. One of our users wants to know, what's your take on final table verbalizing rules? Do you think that the rule right now should, like, I'll try and paraphrase, because I think I know what he's talking about. They were doing at the World Series this year, there was a controversy at the final table that Daniel Negreanu made because there was an actual rule in place where you have to verbalize everything because it's a televised final table, and if you don't, you can get a penalty. And it seemed that the floor were being kind of partial, but how do you feel about the rule in general?
If they're talking about that rule, they're not talking about, you know, what people refer to as like the gold rule of talking or not talking and all that. If you mean that announcing, you know, verbalizing your play, I believe that, you know, anything that changes the game in the way that people are most comfortable playing gives an advantage or a disadvantage to somebody is not. I mean, there's definitely a paradox there, because we, on one hand, you have to understand that it's, you know, you want to keep the purity of the game. But on the other hand, if you don't support the production and the business that's running this television event, then, you know, then these things won't happen. You know what I mean? Like, you have to be a business person about it, and you also have to be, you know, a poker player. So on my poker player instinct, in the same way that I can't stand the final nine, you know, that you wait 3 months and all coach each other, you know, and all that kind of stuff. But I understand it from a business point of view that it's important for the WSOP, for Harris Corporation, to do that. So I understand why they're doing it. I don't love it as a poker player, but I don't fault them for doing that. So I believe that there's, you know, unfortunately, anytime you're talking about a major televised event, you're going to have business issues that come in, you know, where you're just going to have to bend a bit and understand that it's not just about poker. You know, and you knew you were getting yourself into that. When you play the World Series of Poker, you know, like, you don't have to put up your money if you don't want to, if you don't want to be on television, don't play in that event. You know what I mean? If you only want to play in the pure events that are the deepest stacks that have the exact rules that you want, that's your choice. But once you choose to play, I just believe that they should be much clearer about the rules. It seems like sometimes we show up and halfway through the tournament is when they're explaining the rules to us.
Yeah, right. Jamie, thank you so much. Last question I have for you from the chat room. Who is your favorite and the most annoying players for you to play with? Like, so give me your the guy that you love to play with and the guy you hate to play with, I guess.
You know what? I can't say, I know this is kind of a cop-out, but I don't have a favorite. You know, it's like on certain days.
Jamie, are you saying that you cannot spot the fish at the table?
It's not about that. Sometimes I actually don't like taking people's money, as crazy as that sounds. I feel bad sometimes. So my favorite player sometimes is still Locke, right? But some days he's so quiet at the table and playing so well that it's not my favorite guy to be around, even though I love him as a person and I have so much fun with him at the table. You know, to me, poker is such a, you know, an organism in and to itself. Like, when any table has an energy and a flow, and there are some days you could play with the same exact group of people and have the best time and have the worst time. So I know this is, you know, hard to say, but I don't have a favorite player or anything like that. It's on, you know, what day, what time, I always say, you know. So, and then when you talk about the most annoying, I don't know, sometimes it's me. I annoy myself sometimes because I don't, you know, play as well as I want to play, or, you know, for you know, several reasons, I feel like, you know, it depends. You know, here's a perfect example. There are days where Mike Matisau is the nicest, sweetest guy, so easy and kind to be around, and there are days where he's the most annoying human being I've ever been around, and I can't stand it. And so I'm not calling him out. I think that's a lot of people in the poker community are, you know, somewhat bipolar, and so it depends on what day and what time you catch him. And, you know, I have a little bit of it. I don't, you know, put myself in the same category, but there are days when I'm the greatest guy to be around, and there are days where I'm just so quiet at the table that people don't have, you know, they say, what happened to you? How come you're not talking? Well, you know, I'm not on television, and I'm you know, I'm not drinking alcohol at the moment on the table. You know, I get a lot more loquacious, and I'm a lot more fun when I'm drinking at the table, let's put it that way.
Jamie, thank you so much for taking the time to spend with us. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
All right, you. Good luck to whatever you're working on, and hopefully we could touch base with you at some point in the future.
Absolutely. I think I'm going to be around in the poker world in some way or another for until I die.
All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on you, and no doubt if you make the waves, we'll be talking about you.
Thank you.
All right, buddy.
Okay. Bye-bye.